Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Let's do it.
Here's John Williams.
Come up with just one a day, and I'd say you've done good for the world. This is John Hyam in the Allstate Showcase Studio. On Michigan Avenue, we'll be here until 3 o'clock. Then Rokon and Anna DeVellante stroll in with a team of thousands. Until then, we'll, as a friend of mine used to say, try not to lose the license. That'll be until 3 o'clock. Okay, so let's talk about the Robert Lee story. Fearing mean-spirited memes and controversy, ESPN has asked an announcer named Robert Lee to not broadcast the upcoming University of Virginia football game. He was going to do the online broadcast of the September 2nd UVA William & Mary contest. Robert Lee, the announcer, is instead going to do the Pitt-Youngstown State game for the network, which would solve the problem except for the fact that his replacement for the Virginia broadcast is a man named Indigenous White Person. But it's not the only sort of who are these people, what do we say about them, what do we do about them controversy in the news these days. Lordy, we've got a flood of them, don't we? We're debating names and the jobs and the honors in Illinois as much as anywhere. What do we do with Italo Balbo? Now, should we change the name of Columbus Day here in Illinois or Chicago? About Robert Lee, there are 11,000 people in this country named Robert Lee. Actually, I'm surprised there's not more. Lee, a very common name. Robert, not that uncommon. There's at least 11,000 Robert Lees. An ESPN executive said, we didn't change the broadcast lineup to be politically correct. We weren't afraid of the, you know, racial controversy. But here's the quote. Let's not go to the zoo if we don't have to go to the zoo. I mean, the network made the right decision on this because if you imagine how that broadcast would have begun, people would have been just as critical. If at the beginning of the William & Mary Virginia game on Saturday, September 2nd, the announcer said, welcome to the University of Virginia. It's a University of Virginia football versus William & Mary. I'm Robert Lee. People would have slapped their foreheads. You don't know who Robert Lee is. This is a relatively anonymous broadcast dude that America doesn't know, and now he's got the UVA game? Are you kidding me? People would have said, what were they thinking? They could have got anybody to do this game. Instead, out of the blue, they found the one, Robert Lee, who's working for ESPN, and they had him do the Virginia game? Are you kidding me? I mean, we know they're not trying to be coy here, but now here come the memes, here come the snarky comments, here comes the controversy over the announcer name. What were they actually saying? Are they in support of the Robert Lee statues or against the Robert Lee statues? What is the network's position on this? They would have had a whole new can of worms if they did let the guy do the game. You can't win on this one. So they pulled him aside and they said, hey, Robert Lee. And he said, yeah. And they said, as you know, your name's Robert Lee. And he said, got that. They said, listen, you know about this whole controversy over at UVA, right? And he probably said, yeah. And they said, listen, you can do the game. You could not do the game. What do you think? Let's have a conversation about it. Don't you think it'd be easier if you did the Pitt game? Pittsburgh, big school. Is Dave Wanstead still the coach at Pitt? I mean, that's a real school.
I don't believe he is.
Okay, never mind that then. It's just beside the point. So Youngstown State Pitt, you could do that one. And then evidently, Robert Lee said, yeah, okay, that's probably a good idea. Let's just avoid any controversy or, you know, let's just not even go there. So he decided, and they decided that he won't do the game. As the ESPN executive said, let's not go to the zoo if we don't have to go to the zoo. Well, now they're at a new zoo. Now they're at the zoo about making that decision. You cannot win with some of these people. This is not a liberal knee-jerk reaction. Nobody's getting this wrong, except that we're now putting a round peg in a square hole. Okay, when I get to be king, I'll appoint you the head of announcers. What would you do if you were ESPN? Have him do the game or not? I think they made the right call. I mean, you know why they made the right call? Because the kid agreed to it. He was like, yeah, okay. He's not dragging his heels. He's not sitting, shouting and screaming and kicking. He simply said, yeah, that's probably a good idea. And they said, yeah, it's probably a good idea. So then that's what they did. 312-981-7200. Let's just start there, and then we can work our way on to Italo Balbo again. I don't need to go there today. And Indigenous Peoples Day. Boy, there's one for you. Indigenous Peoples Day. We're going to change Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. They've already done that in Evanston and in other cities and states across the country. Should we do that one too? Incidentally, even as I say these words, it is pouring rain at 435 North Michigan Avenue. One of those rains that you can still see the clouds and sun in the sky, some white, some blue, and then some dark, and a deluge has opened up on the people who are not ready for it. It's one of those kinds of rains, as poor ladies walking by me now, where you go, well, it's not going to matter. I'm wet. So be advised. I mean, it's blowing hard, too. It is a downpour on Michigan Avenue right now. If that's not near, is that sweeping the city? Where's that going?
I don't, you know, this was kind of a surprise for us. We just got the marine warning.
Yeah, I heard you say that. This is it.
Yeah.
No?
I'm not.
You said some Lakeshore Lake, lake effect rain.
Lake effect rain. This must be where it's at.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
They are getting pounded downtown.
This is what Lower Wacker's for, people. Head on down. Go to the goat.
I don't like
go get
people.
Yourself a burger.
I don't like people knowing about Lower Wacker Drive because that's my shortcut through the city. It's the best kept secret from the people in the evil suburbs and downstate. Don't tell them about it. It's 115. Okay, 312-981-7200. Call or text now. This is WGN. Ron, this is John. You're on the air. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hey, John. I understand the UVA situation with this Robert Lee. What I don't understand is if you're going to switch it, just keep your mouth shut. Why the press release? Nobody knows who calls those little ball games anyway. It's early in the season, UVA and Lake Forest. So if he shows up at Youngstown Pitt, that's fine. There's no need for the press release.
Totally agree.
Why tell anybody anything?
I don't know how we first, became acquainted with this story. You're right. We don't pay attention to who's doing what games. How this surfaced at all, if that was a conversation they had and said, listen, we're going to quietly switch you from the one game to the other, the planet would never be the wiser. I don't know why this came up. I don't know how this came up.
The way I heard it was released on WGN. ESPN announced that they were going to pull him off that game. Well, if that's the way it happened, then ESPN deserves the backlash.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, yeah.
You know what might have happened? I agree with you. I would have just switched it. But it could well be that a media outlet found out about it and went to ESPN. You know,
said, hey, why'd you make the switch?
They were going to report on it, so ESPN then felt they needed a statement.
And then how do you answer that? I mean, let's suppose it's that way. Then do you just say, oh, we didn't even notice that? No, it's Robert Lee operates out of Cleveland. It was easier for him to get to the Pitt game. You could make up an answer. Or you could own it and say, you know what? We just didn't want to go to the zoo if we didn't have to go to the zoo, which is what they said. I don't know how. I guess the truth is always the best answer.
Much to do about nothing.
Amen to that. All right, Robert. Ron, thanks for the call. I believe he's got a 400-pound walrus or seal in the back seat of his car there. Hey, John, this is John. You're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
I just want to quickly say, when does all this stop? When do we just stop the stupidity? Do we start changing holidays? Should we get rid of Thanksgiving?
I know the turkeys aren't crazy about that.
Native Americans ain't too happy about it either. I mean, it happened a long time ago. People want to start changing street names now and bringing down monuments. I mean, it's ridiculous. When do we go back in history and find out how many famous black people own slaves and get rid of them? Yeah. When does it stop?
I don't have an answer for you on that.
And the only reason the guy, the announcer, agreed with ESPN is because they just got rid of firing a whole bunch of people. I'd be on that same thing. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, right. Whatever you say, boss. Yeah, great idea.
Yeah. Great idea. I want to keep my job. Let's go with it.
Thanks for the call, John. The problem with changing Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day is that that sounds so inauthentic. It sounds so politically correct. It's not named after anybody. It's named after a cause. And I guess that's not a bad thing, but people rally around individuals. You know, Martin Luther King Day represents the civil rights movement. And, I don't know, Jefferson and Washington represent President's Day. And Santa Claus represents Christmas. Jesus does too, by the way, but you get my point. Please don't call. You know, the Easter Bunny and Jesus represent Easter. Indigenous Peoples Day just sounds like a bad fix, doesn't it? Indigenous, it's like, okay, let's all rally around Indigenous peoples. Who, what? You know, couldn't we get Sacagawea or somebody like that? You know, then at least you would be able to sort of study, know, and care about somebody, and by virtue of that, then the larger cause. It just doesn't sound like people are running around going, boy, I sure wish we would do something for Indigenous people. We should, but you don't hear that conversation on the street, and I've not heard it previously expressed that much as something that comes because of Christopher Columbus. I mean, you could do the whole history lesson and go, we didn't treat them well, and Columbus wasn't here first, and therefore we should throw Columbus out and Indigenous people in. But it seems to me like that's a solution looking for a problem. Let's talk to James. You're on WGN. James, you're on the air.
Yes, I agree with your previous caller, and I have to ask you this question. We should be looking for a Zuckerberg to fire a member of his board of directors who has the similar name, David Duke. How much you want to bet that doesn't happen?
Does he have somebody on his board of directors named David Duke?
That's my understanding.
Really? Somebody on the David Zuckerberg's board that would be what, on Facebook's board, is named
Yes, I believe so.
Well, that's an outrage, and something.
Why is that an outrage?
Because we can't be endorsing racism.
Well, look,
because the guy has a similar name.
Yes,
it's not David Duke.
Yes, it is.
Bob Lee was not fired. He's going to be paid the same amount to do a different job.
Yeah, right.
Doesn't make a difference. Okay, there was an action taken. So should this man be removed from the board of directors?
It's apples and bananas, but
responsibility?
No, it's not the same thing. But
Yeah, it is. You know what? It's guys like you that promote this stuff.
Wait a minute, I'm the one that just said they did the right thing. Don't. It's not guys like me.
You didn't have an answer for the previous caller.
Don't throw a guys like me. You do not. You don't know my position on this. This is preposterous.
Come on, you guys glorify it. You got nothing else to talk about. Thanks.
You're the one that called in.
Wonder if he'll call tomorrow on something.
I'm not sure what you guys are doing about this. If you're going to malign me by throwing me in a group and then saying we all do something, at least be clear about the group we're in and what we're doing wrong.
So speak more slowly.
I can't take offense if you don't spell it out for me better than that. Johnny could have changed his name to Bobby. He could have been Bobby Lee instead of Robert. Good afternoon, everyone. Live from the University of Virginia. Welcome to Virginia Football. I'm your announcer, Bobby Lee. That would have been better than Robert or B. Lee or Craig Lee. I don't know. But now you're lying. Let's not advise that the solution is anything but the truth. We've got too much lying going on in this country as it is. So I think we need to tell the truth and own it, manage it, be responsible for it. But Steve, I don't know if you agree with me. You were changing out in the newsroom, but my attitude was if they had gone with Robert Lee to do the game, people would have lost their minds. I mean, you think they're losing their minds about this? If they had had Robert Lee do the game, we would have been going, what are they thinking over there?
Well, and
it would have been just as big a backlash.
You brought up a good point in the Mincing Rascals that we recorded earlier, that it would have been unfair to this guy that people, and they would have created different memes and cartoons, and, you know, it would have been kind of this guy who we didn't know 2 days ago.
Yeah.
2 days from now, we would have known because of that, which isn't fair to him either.
Yeah. He just wants to be the guy behind the microphone. And now he's the guy who's, you know, the object of the story rather than doing the story. Most journalists and play-by-play guys don't want to be in that position. And, now he is. He can't extricate himself from this. Producer Elif looked up the board for Facebook and did not find a David Duke. So if there is one, I don't care. That's apples and tangerines. That's not the same thing. John, I'm a full-fledged liberal, but that man should have just been able to say and stay in broadcast on the original broadcast. It's his name, for gosh sakes. We're getting way too sensitive here. John, why is it a good idea? Would anyone ever have noticed the announcer's name? Everyone all across America is too easily offended. No, we're going down the ridiculous path here. I get it. Remember, the ESPN corporate view was, it's a zoo out there right now. Everybody's losing their minds about these things. If we can avoid it by just switching the announcers quietly out, then we don't have to go to the zoo. Their big mistake was somehow letting all of us find out about it. But you're probably right, Steve. Some people pay attention to these things, like, you know, Sports Illustrated or other, you know, Chicago Tribune sports guys.
It doesn't have to be someone with the media outlet now. Everyone's got a Twitter account or Facebook, you know, and we're all smart alecks now.
Yeah.
And right? So it would have played.
We would have found out eventually. John, they should have let him do the Virginia game. If anyone complained about it, then clearly they are insane. In our studio, Paul Stokes. You remember Paul, don't you? It says here owner, but I'm not sure that that's completely accurate. Are you the owner of Angelica's Bakery?
No, absolutely not.
It says here you're the owner. Congratulations of Angelica's Bakery.
Nice job, Paul. We're proud of you.
News to me. Actually, it was owned and started by my mom, Bobby, back in 1990. So I kind of want to give a shout out to her. I wouldn't be sitting here neither with this key lime if it wasn't for her.
Yeah, so I'll shout out to her. And she's Angelica? No, Angelica's your niece.
Exactly, right.
But what's your mom's name again?
Her name is Bobby.
Bobby.
Yeah, B-O-B-B-I-E.
Bobby. Okay, Bobby, props to you and to your son and to, I guess, that would be her granddaughter?
Her granddaughter.
For running Angelica's Bakery. By the way, so you are in our studio because... a few nights ago, when Saturday Night Live did their weekend update during the week, they do this in the summer, Tina Fey was talking about dealing with the crazy of President Trump. And she said, what we all ought to do is just do what white women have been doing in America ever since Hillary lost, and that is bury yourself in white cake.
I'm feeling sick because, you know, I've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark, and I wasn't confused by it. No, Colin, Nazis are always bad. I don't care what you say.
Well, I don't say.
Then we hear that there's 9 more alt-right rallies planned around the country this Saturday, including one in New York City. I know a lot of us are feeling anxious, and we're asking ourselves, like, what can I do? I'm just one person. What can I do? And so I would urge people this Saturday, instead of participating in the screaming matches and potential violence, find a local business you support, maybe a Jewish-run bakery or an African-American-run bakery. Order a cake with the American flag on it, like this one, and just eat it, Colin.
Wait, I'm sorry, how is that supposed to help?
Love is love, Colin. Sheet caking is a grassroots movement, Colin. Most of the women I know have been doing it once a week since the election.
So that was her advice. You know, there's how we're going to deal with it. Just bury yourself in treats. You know, and it's better than smoking or drinking too much. Just eat some delicious white cake with an American flag.
From Angelica's, absolutely.
Yeah, she neglected to mention your name of your bakery. But then we said, instead of playing that and just talking about it, let's reach out to an African-American bakery. So that's where Angelica's is. You're in Hazelcrest.
Correct.
You're a Southside guy, though, right?
Yeah, born and raised at 82nd and Emerald.
Where'd you go to school?
Simeon. Shout out to the Wolverines.
And then what'd you do after that?
Went to college.
Where'd you go to school?
Initially went to Arkansas State, then finished up at Lewis University.
Lewis University in Joliet.
Right. Well, yeah, Romeoville.
Romeoville. Pardon me. Yeah. Great baseball program there. Good basketball program there.
Yeah.
Did you play sports there at all?
No.
You look like an athlete. How tall are you?
6'5".
Yeah.
I am an athlete.
What do you play?
Nothing right now.
What was your sport?
It was basketball.
Yeah. Did you play? You didn't play at Lewis, though.
No.
You played at Arkansas State?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
Hokey smokes. So then college is over.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get a degree? What did you study?
Computer science, actually. I thought you know, growing up, I always wanted to play basketball. That's what I did. And then I went to Arkansas State, and I saw these guys were much taller, much bigger, much stronger. And I said, well, I probably should hit these books. So that's what I did.
That's an education a lot of athletes don't get. You know, they don't go, oh, yeah, they're a lot better than me.
Right.
So I better have a plan B here.
Right.
So there you are, studying computer science, but now you're working at the bakery. How did that go?
Well, short story, I was in project management, computer science, in the information technology. And so after 9/11, actually, the industry changed, and I was laid off. And so I started my own company, got a contract for about a year with Allstate. That ended. Got another contract doing some things with project management, and then that ended. It kind of dried up. And so my mom would say, well, why don't you come work with the business? So I had no intentions on being self-employed, entrepreneur, or anything. I just thought I would continue to work my way up through the corporate ladder. But been doing that since 2002. And so,
how do you like it?
It's challenging. The good thing about being self-employed is that it allows you, I have young kids, so it allows me to attend their plays, their sporting events, you know, pick them up from school and all that kind of stuff. So things like that I wouldn't be able to do if I worked in corporate America.
Keep going.
Yeah, so, but, you know, being self-employed, a lot of times you have to pay your employees before you pay yourself. And so that happens a lot in the current economy. But, you know, it's choose which one you want to do. So,
you know, the thing that is a private business, I think, would be the most challenging to me, because I've never run a business. Mm-hmm. I've always been getting paychecks, never handing them out. But I would think that the payroll and health care stuff, and when the government puts new impositions about taxes or health care coverage, or you got to do this, you got to do that, everybody goes, it's a good idea. Somebody like you then has to manage that, has to do that.
Right.
I would think that would be enough to almost make me not want to go into business.
It's challenging. It is. It is challenging. But the rewarding part is that being able to employ people, and some of our employees are people who can't get a job. We employ hard to employ citizens, people who may have made mistakes in the past, and we employ them, and they're very appreciative. So a lot of times all this hard work, all this stress is worth it, just being able to do that.
Decidedly you do that? Do you look for people who have challenged lives and try and help them, or is that just happens to be who walks in the door looking for work?
Sometimes we seek them out. Not every time. Of course, we go through all the different procedures that we have in place to make sure
they're not going to steal from you.
Exactly. Or not put them in positions to do that again, but make them an easy transition. And almost everyone who has left the company has gone on to do something better.
So I don't know if that keeps you up at night or makes you sleep well at night, because A, you're worried about employees that are struggling themselves, mm-hmm. and you're a business trying to make it, but B, you know you're doing right by these mm-hmm. people. So that's the good feeling.
That doesn't keep me up at night. Yeah, I have a whole list of other things that keeps me coming up, but the employees isn't one of them.
Well, the caramel cake should be, I don't know, you ought to be able to retire on the caramel cake alone.
And that's the plan.
Yeah.
That's the plan. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did, and I've never heard the word caramel cake.
Yeah.
Literally. I mean, it just shows that I'm not from the South, I guess.
Right.
I don't know.
Right, yeah.
That's a big deal.
It's just something, it's a Southern delicacy. My mom used to make it, and I used to stand right there with her, you know, and when she was done, lick out the bowl. So a lot of people who've heard it. Well, I mean, you said you're from up north, so.
Yeah, well, you know, actually, where am I from? I kind of grew up abroad. My dad was in the Air Force.
Okay.
But then we settled in Joliet and went to school in Manuka. But, you know, I don't have any Southern roots at all.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Stokes is in our studio. He's the not owner of Angelica's Bakery in Hazelcrest. And as a minority-owned business there that Tina Fey said everybody should reach out to. So did you hear then, after we put you on the radio and played that shtick, mm-hmm. did any of our listeners or anybody come in the store?
There was a gentleman who came in less than 30 minutes and said, hey, where's that Paul guy? And he bought some cupcakes, and he said, hey, I just wanted to meet Paul. And so I went out there. I actually just came into the store again and shook his hand. He's like, hey, man, you sounded great on the radio.
You did.
Yeah, he said you're extremely handsome.
He did not say
that. No, he
didn't
say that, but he
should
have.
You are extremely handsome, but he did not say that.
But, yeah, he was a real good guy. We had a couple of ladies who called in and said they liked my voice. So I'm thinking maybe I can be bakery owner, maybe, / radio person.
Radio announcer?
Yeah, maybe, something.
Well, what I think you should do is give us a lot of money in the form of advertising. Imagine if every day we were on here talking about your key lime cake.
Right.
or caramel cake or the cupcakes, which I guess are all the rage too,
yes.
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course, you know, that's the decision you got to make. Right. Will I make enough to pay for the advertising and then some?
Right.
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, what do I pay John? Will I pay WGN?
You got to pay me. You got to pay the radio station. Right. I mean, listen, it's not inexpensive to advertise you. It may bankrupt you. I don't know.
Well, we don't want that.
Well, so really, so like, how is business doing for you guys? How does it go? Is this summer probably an off season because it's hot and everything?
Yeah, summer normally slows down for us, you know, in the baking business. November, December, January is when we pick up. It's a totally different animal for Angelica's Bakery during those times. And a lot of our listeners who know about us, they know exactly what I'm talking about. We have lines
really
outside the, you know, the store. So,
do you guys do a coffee cake?
No. Yeah. No, we don't.
See, now that's my cup of tea, and not that I get them all the time, but in fact, when you said caramel cake, there's a bakery that for years in Peoria, and I lived and worked there for 10 years, was called Trefsker's. It was a famous bakery, and they did a butterscotch coffee cake, among others, and those were just, you know, some braided bread with some crumbles and icing on it. I don't know how they did it, but boy, was that the bomb.
Yeah, we've tried different, you know, pastries and coffee cakes, but our customers just seem to like the things that we serve, and so we just try to cater to what they like.
Yeah, I guess that's the gamble, right? Like you can introduce new products, but if your customers don't take to it, then you're wrong. They're right, right? Right.
Absolutely.
Even if it's a great coffee cake or whatever.
Right.
But if we did the John Williams braided butterscotch coffee cake, I wonder if that would sell.
We can make it happen.
We have to come up with a recipe and all of that jazz. Mm-hmm. What did you bring by here for us now?
I brought you the key lime cake. That is relatively new. It's something we've only been doing maybe 2 years.
This thing looks beautiful, by the way.
And we just made it for you. I brought it in a little tin for you. Make it.
It's a round, pretty silvery tin.
Right.
Then it has a clear kind of a drum plastic finish on top that you can see through. Then there's a little sort of pastry top. What do you call this? Just a piece of insulated paper.
Yeah, it's just so the icing won't stick to the top of the tin. And so, you know, John, it started raining when I was walking in, and so I protected your cake.
You gave it your all.
I gave him all. Yes, I did.
Well, it is a dry but beautiful circular. It looks like a key lime pie, but it's got icing all the way around, so that'd be a cake with a little lime dot in the center. And then when I cut into this, and by the way, the Petersons are coming over for dinner tonight.
Okay.
So I thought, I texted my wife, and I said, normally when somebody brings something by for the station, we cut it open and everybody has some. I'm not sharing this. I'm saving this for the Petersons. We're going to have this with coffee.
That ain't right.
No. I think I'm pretty good about sharing, Steve, but I don't think I'm going to share this. If it's any consolation, I'll tell you about it tomorrow.
Great. I look forward to that.
Take a video of you eating it, John.
I'll bring leftovers, Steve, and I will bring a piece of the key lime cake. So is it like pie or cake inside?
It's like cake, but you like pie, so it has a little tangy taste to it.
Yeah.
So, and it's green, so it's very popular with our customers.
Well, this looks terrific. Listen, it's nice to meet you in person. Continued success, Paul Stokes. Is there anything else I can say or do for you over there in Hazelcrest?
No, just thank you for this opportunity. My employee, my family, our customers, we appreciate you giving us this platform just to let people know more about Angelica's Bakery. I want to give a shout out to my mom, my wife, and three girls, and everyone is listening.
So that he can support this family. Go buy a cake, please. Please.
I had college. Please
don't
help.
Resort to that. Resort to this. Everything we've had from you is not only beautifully done, but delicious. The cakes that we bought last week were fantastic. And by no means did I expect you to do this, but it was nice of you to come by and visit with us. And it's just also nice to meet a business owner. And, you know, I also thought what you said to us on the radio when we were talking about the issues Tina Fey was talking about just sounded right. I think you had the right tone. You said, you know, let's beat this thing with love, not hate.
Yeah.
You know, and I just thought that you did us a favor that day, and I really appreciated you coming on.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for calling me.
Okay, so if I want to go to your place now, it's at 17535. How do you say the address?
173.
Wait, 175-35?
Yes.
175-35 South Kedzie Avenue in Hazelcrest, and the website is Angela's Cakes.
Angelica's Cakes. God,
I did that last time, too.
Angelica's with an S and cakes with an S. com.
Angelica's Cakes.
Right.
Angelica's Cakes.
We're on Facebook and Instagram as well.
I'm giving you all this love, and then I get the name wrong. That doesn't sound right.
You found us, they'll find us, too.
Yeah. Okay, nice to meet you, Paul.
All right, thank you.
Something else is going on, make sure you let us know, okay?
Oh, absolutely.
And if you decide to go with a coffee cake,
you'll be the first one I'll call.
Let me know. By the way, you guys ship these cakes too, right?
Yes, we do. We ship to all 50 states.
Seriously. I mean, you're a big enough deal that people know you all around the country.
Yes.
And is it the pie or the cake that you're, the key lime cake that you're shipping?
We ship key lime cake, but the caramel is the most popular when it comes to shipping. We ship to hot regions like Arizona and Nevada all the time. And to Texas, yeah.
Good deal. All right. Nice to meet you, sir.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Yep, that's one per show, by the way, or one half per hour. Hi, it's John. It's 2:07 on WGN. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We really appreciate you tuning in. We also very, very, very much appreciate your calls and your texts. 312-981-7200. That's 312-981-7200 if along the way you want to call or text. And by the way, Steve, while I was giving to our last guest, Paul Stokes from Angelica's Bakery, some good ideas about baked goods that they should initiate.
Yeah.
I suggested they come up with the John Williams braided butterscotch coffee cake, which is one of my favorites. And he said that he would take that under advisement.
Which means no way.
So somebody texted us and they said, hey, John, they still have your Java chocolate chip ice cream at Campanari's Ice Cream Shop in Mount Prospect. We checked online when we did a Hometown Voices tour.
I remember that.
And I said, this is my favorite. And they came up with a John Williams flavor there, which to this day is still on their menu.
That's exciting.
Here's my problem with that. It's no longer called John Williams Java Chocolate Chip. It's just Java Chocolate Chip.
Well, it doesn't count at all.
I mean, it does not.
No.
I frankly am thinking about getting the legal team involved in this. I'm not sure that they can even do that.
Because you are a contributor to that flavor.
Well, it's my flavor. And
it's not yours.
I believe it's theft. Nobody else had ever thought of a sort of Java chocolate chip before. Those are my two flavors. It was a sensational taste at Campanari's Ice Cream. So if you know them, the folks in Mount Prospect, tell them thank you for keeping it on the menu. They need to change the name to John Williams, or they'll be hearing from Tribune Legal. By the way, Tribune Legal, very busy these days, but still, I think they'll take up my case. One last note to all of you business owners out there. If you come up with the John Williams branded or named thing, I will personally promote it on the air. You put me on your menu, come up with a thing that has my name on it, and then I'll give you free publicity. I'm not sure that's legal on our end, but let's just go with that for the time being. So here's the story about Sheriff Arpaio. I mean, we've all been hearing a lot about this. In fact, Elif's going to play for us Donald Trump speaking about it here in just like 1.3 seconds. So Joe Arpaio, the Maricopa County Sheriff, a former Maricopa County Sheriff, has been a cause celeb for a while, that we need to be tough on crime. And he was America's toughest sheriff until he didn't win re-election and then found himself afoul of the law. And he's been convicted, not yet sentenced. That's still to come. The president could before or after pardon him. About that, at a rally in Phoenix the other day, the president said,
was Sheriff Joe convicted for doing his job? That's what he should have had a jury. But you know what? I'll make a prediction. I think he's going to be just fine. OK, but I won't do it tonight because I don't want to cause any controversy. Is that okay?
Another day in the land of bizarre from the president, but let's talk to Megan Cassidy now, who is a reporter with the Arizona Republic. Megan, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking our call. What was the reaction where you were, or what was your personal reaction when the president said that the other night?
Well, actually, I was outside. So I was outside reporting on the protests. And so I actually was not inside when he said that. But I started getting a bunch of news alerts on my phone. And, you know, I guess it wasn't particularly surprising. There's been speculation about a pardon for a while, particularly in the week leading up to this. Trump said himself in a Fox News interview that he was seriously considering it. Yeah. And then days later confirmed that he was going to be in Phoenix. So that really whipped up a lot of speculation that it was going to happen at the time.
I want to talk about that, but just wanted to note before we go any further, and that is the president said that he had heard from the Secret Service that there wasn't a very big crowd protesting outside, but the pictures I saw made it look like there were. Would you describe the unrest or the crowd or whatever it is that you saw outside the arena?
Oh, it was huge. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was filling up blocks. I mean, police had to set up several barricades around the Phoenix Convention Center to just really kind of keep the pro-Trump supporters and the protesters away from each other. But Phoenix police, I think, estimated tens of thousands.
So in my world, that's a big crowd of protesters. I guess,
yes, but it is in my world as well.
And maybe with divided loyalties. Maybe some of them were there to, you know, were for the president. Maybe some were not. So tell us who Joe Arpaio is. Can you just sort of give us the backstory on him a little bit?
Sure. He is the longest running sheriff in Maricopa County. He's 85 years old now. He was ousted in his seventh bid for sheriff. That was this past November. But he became just kind of a Republican darling for his tough-on-crime stance. And then later in his career, towards the mid-2000s and in a little after 2010, for his immigration crackdowns, illegal immigration crackdowns. And so there's several ways that he had his deputies try to target illegal immigrants, which was during with workplace raids. They would target very heavily Hispanic communities, and then during traffic patrols with these pretextual stops. And so eventually, though, he started getting into legal trouble.
You said pretextual stops? What is that?
Pretextual stops, yeah. So, like, an officer will see somebody, you know, who may or may not have, you know, gotten into another lane without turning the blinker on or something along those lines. You know, very small law-breaking. As the pretext to pull somebody over when they're really the intent is something else.
Did they call it racial profiling?
They did not. No, but the ACLU did, and several defendants did. There was a class action lawsuit that was filed against the office beginning in 2007. Among many lawsuits, this is kind of the meat and potatoes one. And because of this suit, a judge did find that. The sheriff's office had illegally targeted Latinos during their immigration crackdowns and ordered sweeping and very, very expensive reforms on the office.
Okay, so they were doing that, and then yeah. A judge found that that was in violation of the law. Is that what you're saying?
So yeah, so that's the whole lawsuit. That's the civil suit. Where Arpaio ended up getting in personal trouble was when a judge said you either have to arrest or release. Basically, you can't take somebody into custody or detain anyone just because you believe that they're in the country illegally. There has to be a crime. So the judge ordered this in 2011 before he even found that the office had racially profiled. In 2011, he said, you know what, you need to stop doing this and then we'll go to trial. But for 17 months thereafter, his deputies did still continue their illegal immigration enforcement tactics. They would pick people up that believed were in the country illegally, turn them over to either Immigration Customs Enforcement or to Border Patrol. So that was against the court order. That is what Arpaio has now been convicted of, is criminal contempt of court because he ignored the judge's order.
Sounds a lot like what we're dealing with in Chicago and other cities where they declare themselves sanctuary cities. And the point is, we're not going to do ICE's work. We're not a federal agency. We're local county sheriff's deputies or police officers. And not only are we not going to hold them beyond how long we're supposed to hold them, but we're not going to go looking for them. It sounds like it was the exact opposite in Phoenix.
Yes, yes, it actually was. And it was bolstered by SB 1070. That was a very controversial law that was bill that was passed in, several years ago. And they called Arpaio the tip of the spear on that. He was the one that would go and enforce these immigration laws the way that the lawmakers, who were also intended to be tough on immigration, the way they were intended.
Okay, so he's in violation of this court order then. It's interesting, did they prosecute any of his sheriff's deputies? They were the ones actually doing the stops, right?
Initially, none of the deputies, because it was kind of understood that these were at Arpaio's orders. I mean, he would get on TV and really boast that he was going after illegal immigrants, and that's the way that it was, and that that nobody was going to tell him not to.
Yeah.
So I think that it was understood by really everybody involved in both the civil and the criminal cases that the orders came from the top. And then later in the trial, some of the deputies and some of the ranking officials would say that, I thought that maybe what we were doing was wrong, but these are my orders, so we continue doing it.
And I suppose this doesn't matter, but maybe in some of those instances they did round up illegal aliens. But I suppose it's also possible.
For sure they did.
But they probably also detained unnecessarily or illegally. U.S. citizens.
That's where the lawsuit actually. Yeah, that's where the lawsuit came from. There were four, I believe, in the initial suit. I think one. There was somebody who was vacationing here. Others who had visas. Who maybe weren't American citizens, but they had the legal right to be here.
Right, right. So then they get detained. Okay, so he continues to thumb his nose. So then he's found guilty, but he's not been sentenced yet, right?
No, that is coming on October 5th, short of a pardon, which we're all kind of expecting at this point.
Really? You mentioned that it was expensive for the county. How so? I mean, I suppose lawsuits sometimes require attorneys, and that means that the meter's running. But you mentioned to me off the air $70 million to Maricopa County.
We are just scraping $70 million right now over a 10-year period.
How does it come to that?
A lot of it's legal fees. That's where it started. The legal fees really started piling up by 2013. But what really, really did us in was after the judge ordered that reforms be made to the office. And so that required a quarter point in monitor, a lot more technology, more training for the officers to make sure that they weren't doing any more discriminatory policing. And then really just kind of shuffling around people. And a lot of the money that taxpayers are spending at this point is for full-time employees who have to spend all of their jobs at the sheriff's office making sure that the sheriff's office gets into compliance.
Wow. Well, were there settlements to some of the aggrieved?
At this point, they're working on that. The initial lawsuit did not ask for any money. It just really asked for a judge to order a change in policies. But after the judge, criminal contempt case that I was talking about, after the judge ordered him to stop detaining illegal immigrants, and he kept doing that, and then won the criminal or the civil end of the contempt case. Those victims now are entitled to some of a compensation pool. So we're still kind of ironing out the details on how much they're going to be getting. But yeah, those 170 odd victims of illegal detention are entitled to some sort of a settlement eventually.
Well, I don't know. I'm not an expert on this, Megan, but it would seem to me like that could be even more expensive than $70 million. That strikes me as the sort of thing that a jury or a judge would say, we're going to punish the county. Too bad for the county, because it was one man's.
No, they're really not. It would seem like that. But the settlements from what I've seen with the initial paperwork are very small. Only
really?
A couple thousand.
Really? I would say. See, here's what I. Because it would seem to me like, well, then what the hell? Maybe the next county is going to be just as discriminatory because the penalty isn't that great, and the upside is that the tough sheriff gets to be reelected, or the citizens feel better about the sort of policing that the sheriff's deputies are doing, even if it's illegal. If you don't make them pay a price, then I don't know how you motivate them to do right, you know?
Right, right. Well, you know, I think that there is still another option for victims to take. This, if they do take this settlement, then they don't get to sue further. If they decide they want to sue on their own, they can do that as well.
Yeah.
But I do think that there is something to be said about the $70 million that's just been piling on over these past few years, because there are a lot of people here in Phoenix who have made the argument that that was the reason that Arpaio was ousted from office, because Trump won here I don't want to say a landslide, but handily, and Arpaio lost. And given the fact that they both just kind of had the same platform, we were guessing that it was the fiscal conservatives that got him out of office but elected Trump in this county.
Megan Cassidy's on the line, reporter at the Arizona Republic in Phoenix. Well, how do the people? The president, when he talked about Arpaio at that rally, everybody was cheering. You got the sense that Arizonans are on Arpaio's side. Can you help me with that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it really depends on who you ask. There was a poll that was taken that actually showed that about 50% of Arizonans do not want Arpaio to be pardoned, versus about 20% who do. And then the remaining people don't really have an opinion on it. But the people who were inside Trump's rally are Trump supporters. And if you're a Trump supporter, there's a very good chance that you're also an Arpaio supporter. Arpaio and Trump have a very warm relationship. Arpaio was one of his most vocal advocates during the campaign. And if you're tough on, if you like your politicians to be tough on immigration, chances are you'll like both of them. But, you know, what the cameras didn't show was the tens of thousands of protesters outside who had several picketing signs that had Arpaio along with Trump on there. There are people here, mostly on the left, that see Arpaio as the face of racism in Arizona.
I don't understand your politics in your state. It would seem to me a delicate proposition, because there's so many Mexican Americans or Hispanic Americans in Arizona that if you run on that kind of platform, one audience might support that, but in general, I think that would be difficult to win then.
You would think so, but the Hispanic communities have really had a hard time galvanizing voters. It seems like every election, there's somebody that says, this is the time that they're all going to show up. And we just really haven't seen these massive waves of Hispanic voters that people have predicted in the past.
Okay, so October 5th, we'll find out. You know, maybe the president is waiting, because if he, while convicted, is sentenced to not go to jail, I mean, that's possible, right? Mm-hmm. Then maybe there's no need to pardon him.
Yeah, I've wondered that myself. But, you know, I've also wondered if the pardon is just on principle.
Right, pardon me the way.
John, while the two of you were talking, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked about this at the White House briefing, which is being broadcast today, and she said that they're still going through the process, and that once more is known, they will let you know. Now, I know that's not much of an answer, but she just was asked about the latest of it today, and that's what she said.
Well, the talking points go like this, don't they? What my understanding is, what they're drafting up is language that says, given his 50 years of service to this country, he has a military background, and obviously he's served the citizens of the county as the sheriff, that blah, blah, blah. I mean, they're going to build him up as the victim himself, or at least as the great public servant.
Right. And that's been his a lot of his legal defense.
Poor
as well.
Guy. Yeah, yeah. Anything else?
And he's 85 years old.
Yeah. That's part of, I guess, the consideration. Megan, anything else we should know before I let you go then?
I think you've had some good questions. I think we've covered it.
Yeah. All right. So October 5th or sooner. We'll continue to follow Joe Arpaio's story. Hey, Megan, it's nice to talk to you. I'm going to call you again. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
I did not realize that Sarah Huckabee Sanders was live today.
Second time this month.
Weren't they always live? When Josh Earnest was doing them, didn't every single one?
Yeah, they've almost always.
You could always. Nobody wanted to. They were never so interesting. But
well, they got interesting in the 90s during the Clinton campaign and Mike McCurry, our Clinton presidency. And he had a lot of work to do there.
Well, were those regularly available via television?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Now, I don't know. They clearly cracked down and started limiting them. But also, as far as only the second one this month, they have been out of the White House for much of this month.
What do you mean? The president's been on vacation, et cetera.
Right, right.
Yeah, right. And so when he's not there, then they don't.
I don't know if in past administrations, if they would have a briefing. I would imagine they would still have a briefing just wherever he was.
Well, it would seem to me like the president of the United States works for the American people, even though he thinks it's all about him, that this is his country and he now has a Navy. He works for us. So as taxpayers, I think I could see why they might not want to televise, especially Sean Spicer back in the day. But Sarah Sanders handling some of these contentious press conferences, nobody looks good on those. But I don't think it should be their call. I don't think the White House, and I don't know how you execute this, but I just don't think it's their call. They're working for us. If, for instance, the media said, no, we demand to be able to broadcast a White House press briefing or anything else that we want to, we have a right to. And you're working for the citizens, not the other way around.
Well, then they would just say we weren't going to have one. I mean, there were a number of days where they just didn't have one.
Yeah.
Either.
I almost wonder if that wouldn't be a better option. Just play hardball with that. But now, I don't know. I don't know if that accomplishes anything. I don't know. Hey, you know what? You know what bugs me about President Trump lately, though?
I got a story coming up in the headlines that you're going to love.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, when the president talks about how, for instance, he's going to have this new program in Afghanistan, whenever he's referring to the military, he always talks about his generals. I've talked to my generals.
Mm-hmm.
They're not his generals. They're our generals. They're all working for the American people. They don't work for the president. I mean, I understand the hierarchy and he's the commander in chief, right? But his generals makes it sound like they're not my generals. They're my generals, too.
Like he has possession of them?
Yeah, and control of them.
Well, he does have control of them. He's the commander in chief.
I understand that. And it's a military operation, and God help us, but he's in charge of our military. None of us should sleep well at night as a result of that. But I don't know. There's that attitude that comes through. I don't remember Bush, who certainly had use of generals. I don't remember him saying his generals.
No, it'd be the generals or...
Or our military. I've consulted with our military team. I don't know how he put it, but Trump is so happy to have generals working for him. And I'm always yelling at the TV or to myself, to that little inner voice in there going, you know what? They're not your generals, dude. They're all working for us. We're paying for the airplanes, and they're all trying to do our bidding on what's best for us.
Did you notice because this is a thing for me, one of the Hawaiian senators, I'm sorry, I don't remember his name, after the Charlottesville statement, said he's not my president.
Yeah, I don't like that either. If you're a citizen,
I'm assuming he's a Democrat. But
yeah, no, if you're a citizen, you want to put that on your T-shirt. I get that. I we know what you mean.
And but he is.
You have a right. But he is your president. And if you are in the United States Senate, he's your president. Yeah, I wouldn't advise that. It's 2:31. We can do it. Okay. So 2:31 on. I'm a little intrigued, too, by... Thank God I wasn't on the air yesterday. I was so able to take Wednesday off after the Tuesday night speech by the president. But there was one guy who was standing in the backdrop that I've always wondered about. The black guy who has the T-shirt that says Blacks for Trump. Do you know who I'm talking about? Did you notice
him? Yeah, he was kind of associated with a weird website, wasn't he?
Well, yeah. So have you been talking about this? Did you follow up on him at all?
I just saw a tweet that night. Someone had looked it up.
He's a character who calls himself, I mean, this is how he identifies himself or brands himself, Michael the Black Man. And he's seen not infrequently at Trump events. And I've always wondered, who are the people that stand behind the president when he gives a speech? I mean, from Millard Fillmore on, when you see a president, I think the people that are in the shot are a very calculated lot of people. It's either a rainbow of school children, or it's military people, or it's a rainbow-blended crowd of people. But I think if you're at the rally, that's one thing. But if you're in the TV shot, that is not by coincidence or accident that you're there. Now, maybe they're just going, all right, white guy, black guy, lady, tall person, short person, and then it's not you particularly, but it's what you look like or what you represent. But I still think that shot does not happen, but that somebody said, you, yes, you know. And evidently, you, yes, a lot is Michael the Black Man. I don't know how many blacks show up at Trump rallies, but boy, this guy is not infrequently seen at some Trump events. So there he was at the thing the other night, and he's holding a sign that reads Blacks for Trump. He wears a T-shirt proclaiming this is from the Chicago Tribune with equal conviction that Trump and Republicans are not racist. Almost always, he plugs his wild website, gods2.com, across his chest. And there he was Tuesday night in Phoenix. The presence of Michael the Black Man, variously known as Michael Simonet, Maurice Woodside, and Michael Israel, has inspired not only trending Twitter hashtags, but a great deal of curiosity in Google searches. Internet sleuths find the man's bizarre URL, an easily accessed gateway, to his strange and checkered past. The radical fringe activist from Miami once belonged to a violent black supremacist religious cult, and he runs a handful of amateur, unintelligible conspiracy websites. He has called Barack Obama the Beast, Hillary Clinton a Ku Klux Klan member, and Oprah Winfrey, he says, is the devil. In the 90s, he was charged and acquitted with conspiracy to commit two murders. Michael the Black Man loves President Trump, and President Trump's campaign apparently loves him right back. It's unclear if the White House or President Trump's campaign officials are aware of Michael the Black Man's turbulent history or extreme political views, but he and his followers have stumped for the president at the inauguration, at the Super Bowl. He sort of reminds me of the guy that had John 3:16 on his shirt all the time, because you always thought, how does he get there? Right. How did he get tickets to that? Super Bowl, you can't get to the Super Bowl. The inauguration was a tough ticket. There he is! How does that happen? In July, he posted video footage of himself at Mar-a-Lago, at the club, President Trump's so-called winter White House for the Republican Party of Palm Beach County's annual Lincoln Day dinner. Wearing a black dinner coat over a white Blacks for Trump T-shirt, Michael the Black Man posed with the local GOP chairman, apparently took a photo of First Lady Melania Trump, and recorded a selfie video that showed his arm slung over the shoulder of Florida Governor Rick Scott. There he was, palling with the governor. I saw you on TV with Trump, Scott can be heard telling Michael the Black Man. You did a good job. I'm looking at his website, screen grabs here. You can buy Blacks for Trump T-shirts and hats. It's filled with grammatical inconsistencies.
Inconsistencies?
Well, it's just totally bizarre and wrong-headed. And I don't think it's fair to the president or his team to associate them with this guy. You know, maybe their only mistake was not properly vetting the people in the TV shots. But just because a crazy person supports Donald Trump does not mean that Donald Trump supports or endorses that any more than if a crazy person endorsed or supported Hillary or Bernie. That doesn't mean that they are that way. You know, these crazy people can support and put up websites for whoever they want. And I think you have to give the president that accommodation. This is more about this guy. It's not about Trump. It's just about this guy. He's a nut job. The guy with the John 3:16, he was the guy with the rainbow hair, right? Do you remember the guy?
Yeah.
But his message was, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. Blacks for Trump has a different set of messages, I'm telling you. This guy's a long-distance phone call. He's out there. He is really, he's big-time bizarro. He's big-time bizarre. And so now the Trump people have a decision to make, because now we know who he is, and we know they know who he is. So if Michael the Black Man now appears at the next Trump thing, then you have to know that they said yes to that. And you would think that they would decide to say no. I'll tell you another batch of name-calling that's hard to believe right now is this political cartoon controversy between the mayor and the governor. You know the cartoon I'm talking about that the Illinois Policy Institute published?
Sure.
We talked about this in the Mincing Rascals podcast, and you'll be able to hear this conversation with Eric Zorn. Unfortunately, the political cartoonist, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, Scott Stantis. When you look at that cartoon, you have to have a gut reaction. And it's either, oh my God, that's in poor taste, or I get the message and it's not in poor taste. I was once again in the latter. I saw it and got the message and didn't think it was in such terrible taste. And now that it's explained to me, oh, they shouldn't have done that, I get it. I get it. Maybe they shouldn't have drawn that black child that way. Maybe the white millionaire shouldn't have been portrayed that way. I guess it was him. I can be persuaded. I don't want to be on the wrong side on this one. But it's not as egregious as some cartoons and statements you'll see and hear these days. So the governor, the governor mishandled this one big time. He said, it's not my job, right, Steve, to pass judgment on every editorial cartoon that gets published or put on a website these days.
Right.
I don't have to go there.
No.
But you're there.
Well, there was a statement then released in his name that said, as a white man, I'm not going to. And it seems as if, you know, he then later said that did not reflect my views. And now today you have four communication staffers or higher up, actually.
One of them was a Ricketts.
Fired or resigned.
One of the Ricketts. Well, so somebody said that this is a cowardice. It was not courageous of him. It's like, if you're going to be part of the conversation, Governor, then I'm sorry you don't want to be there, but you're the governor. You've got it. You're in this. Now, what do you say about that? He has to have an opinion about it.
About the cartoon?
Well, I don't give him this pass. As a white male, it's not my place to judge that.
I don't think white male were his. That's the problem. That wasn't his. Those weren't his words.
Yeah.
He had a staff who put that out. And that was a terrible statement.
How did they attribute that to him? That's such a personal thing. Right? Isn't that, that's such a peculiar and personal thing. You can imagine him on the phone.
It's the sort of thing that if you're wrong, it could cost you your job.
Well, so you're on the phone with your staff and you're saying, okay, well, look, you guys, look, as a white man, I don't know what it's like to see that cartoon as a person of color. So I don't know what my reaction should be. And then somebody wrote that down. And the next thing you know, he's reading a statement from his office saying, as a white male, I don't have an opinion about that. As the governor, you do. We're not asking you as a white guy. We're asking you as the governor.
I think, you know, I want to be more careful about this and look up more of it because you're assuming he said it. I don't think he ever said it.
Yeah.
I think the statement was written on his behalf, and that's the problem.
Okay, then what about Rahm Emanuel criticizing him for his reaction to it?
Well, look, if it goes out in your name, you have to answer for the criticism. That's why you fire the people who did it.
Okay, but do you think this is an argument that Rahm needs to involve himself in? I mean, Lord, the guy's shooting himself in the foot plenty. You don't need to stand there and cheer it on.
Well, no, because the mayor is negotiating or, you know, right now for a better school funding bill for Chicago.
I know that.
The governor vetoed key parts of it for Chicago. So the more political weight that they can put on the governor, the better off Chicago will be.
I think that's a bad tactic by the mayor. I think, you know, if you're...
Okay, so here, let me just read this. I'm reading from the Tribune's account of the statement. Rahm administration put out an initial statement Tuesday night noting the cartoon was removed. Quote, and the governor, as a white male, does not have anything more to add to the discussion. So those weren't, they didn't, the statement didn't even put the,
it's not in the first
words,
person. Yeah.
Yeah, they weren't in the governor's, out of the governor's mouth. It was out of the governor's office.
I think it's
temporary as they
okay.
were.
But what's the bigger sin, the governor's staff or the mayor for capitalizing on that?
Well,
I mean, if I'm a person of color or sensitive to that cartoon, I kind of resent the mayor using it to pile on the governor for a different reason. You're using that as leverage for crying out loud. That doesn't make the mayor genuine about it. It just makes him opportunistic.
Yeah, well, it's politics, and he's trying to get a deal for his residents. I don't understand.
Shame on him.
Wait, you're in an upside-down world. Why? At the time, they didn't know that this wasn't a statement with the governor's blessing, right? I mean, it's just a weird thing to say. Why wouldn't you try to capitalize on it?
Really? If you're the mayor, you see, because I just think that issue is so sensitive in particular to people of color or those who are sensitive about this issue, whatever their stripe.
So you're saying, I see what you're saying.
Oh, my God. Hey, look at that. So, they made a mistake. Let's use that for our political advantage.
Rather than try to conflate it, he should have just looked at it for what it was.
Right. The world's complicated enough as it is.
All right, you got me.
Okay, now I'm going to tell you how to spend lottery winnings. Next on WGN. Speaking of taking advantage of the news for your own political purposes, this hurricane's bearing down on Texas. Have you seen the video that President Trump on his new network has put out?
I saw that he tweeted it, yeah.
Yeah. So it's got kind of newsy, don't worry, the cavalry's coming, important music. Dun, 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 dun. And then there's the president walking through what looks like the action room where people are taking care of things. Don't worry, we're on it. And he's just surveying the room, walking around, looking like, I'm in charge. Don't you worry, the cavalry's here. Donald Trump to the rescue. Don't worry about the hurricane. So that's the video. And then the hashtag is, or the tweet is, as hashtag Hurricane Harvey intensifies, remember to hashtag plan ahead. Checkmark. Hurricane.gov, checkmark, ready.gov, checkmark, FEMA.gov. It almost makes you wish there were a hurricane so that they can just stamp it out with that preparedness.
Was the, that was the audio.
That was the music.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm careful.
All I'm saying is they better not screw this up.
There better not
be a brownie in his administration. Why aren't you supporting me on this laughable criticism?
Because I've tried to be careful and not.
The fruit is so low here, Steve. Let me pick it for crying out loud. No?
Someone just said it's always good to put a video with the tweet, and they had a stock video. That's the stock FEMA video.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I thought that was him actually taking care of the hurricane. That's just him walking through a room?
He's walking through FEMA. Looks like he's being introduced to FEMA. So
hashtag sucker. Thinking about retirement, but don't know if you have the resources to live the life you've dreamed about?
Yes.
Worry about that more and more every day. Actually, we should. Look, here's the object of the game. Have a nice life, save some money, retire, and then don't outlive your resources. Maybe you're wondering if it's time to sell your family business. Now, how do you manage that? Maybe you're recently widowed and unsure of where to look to for financial support. Private Vista can help. I know the people at Private Vista. I reached out to them when we were trying to get our sons through college, and I said, how are we going to save, and how do we spend that money when we do? And some of the people there said, here's how you do it. And Brenda and I were so thrilled that we turned our own personal financial management over to them. And I was so happy with that. I said, I want to be able to tell your story on my radio show. And they said, okay. So here's a commercial for Private Vista. Financial planning isn't just about the numbers, they say. They care about what's important in your life. I can testify to that. Private Vista has developed an evolved approach to financial planning and investment management. It helps answer life's difficult questions. They have a team of trusted advisors, and they'll work closely with you to build out your financial resources and align them with your life goals. Conveniently located with offices in Chicago and Hinsdale, My Private Vista can help. Visit myprivatevista.com. The company is Private Vista. The website is myprivatevista.com. They'll give you a free consultation. Private Vista, wealth management evolved. Am I still playing commercials or am I talking here, Elif Garris? What am I doing? Help me now. Help me now.
Got another 3 minutes to use.
To talk or to play? So can I talk about the lottery for a second here?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the deal. The lady wins, what was it, $759 million. She's going to take it probably as a lump sum and get about $400 million and then $447 million, and then after taxes she'll have about $250 million. She will have a lump sum in her bank account, $250 million. If you said we're going to take away $1 million, I would be equally perplexed and nervous. That's too much money for one person. If she had taken it as an annuity over 29 years, which was what I always recommend, she would get $26 million a year. They'd subtract taxes, say $15 million. She would get tens of millions of dollars a year for 29 years guaranteed. That's the way to roll on these things. Because then when somebody comes up to you and says, hey, you got $200 million, can I have $100 million? You could say, no, I only have $15 million. I only got $15 million this year, and I just blew $5 million of it on a condo. So then you've got less money. Don't you see you'll be able to bat the flies away of people with their hands out because you're not getting it all at once?
Well, I don't think people should be begging you for your money that you...
Yeah, well, you tell them that. Do you think they're going to show up at my door? Sure they are. And you know who else I worry about? So she has a 26-year-old and a 31-year-old, son and daughter. And as much as you can say, well, I'm not going to come to work anymore because I've been working for 30 years. That's great. You don't have to work anymore. Enjoy your life. But I would. So then, what is the motivation? If your mom just won take home $447 million, wouldn't you worry that your kids would no longer have any motivation? You want your kids to go out and make their own mark. You know, live, work hard, do. Nah, your kids go, well, I really am not going to work that hard after all. The rest of my life, I know I can slack because mom has $447 million in the bank.
Unless they have a really big dream that they want to follow.
I'll bet this is harder for them to follow it. I would worry for the kids. Ro and Anna are in the studio in a minute. Just turned 3 o'clock, by the way, Judy Pilak, as we get ready for Ro and Anna. We have a new top story for you. The Powerball, the $759 million amount, is evidently rigged.
What?
Ro and Anna's team are telling us that since the giant jackpots always go to somebody in Chicopee, Iowa, or Chicopee, Massachusetts, it's never somebody in Chicago.
It's always a small town, isn't
it? It's always some little
very small town that no one's heard of.
And they're all sitting there smiling with the oversized check. And right. You go, why can't it just be one of us? One of us big city dwellers.
And she bought the ticket last night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one winner.
What's wrong with buying it last night? I bought one last
night. And she used birthdays, which they say never do.
So
birthdays are a no-no?
She beat all the odds.
Do you know did she buy more than one ticket? How many tickets did she buy?
I thought she said just one, didn't she?
I feel like she just bought one, yeah.
That's
amazing.
She did
use her numbers, yeah.
Right.
What's going on, Anna DeVlantis?
You know, didn't win. Not even a dollar. I went and checked just because sometimes you're like, when the jackpot's that big, even if you get two numbers or three numbers, that maybe you get a little something. No, didn't win anything. But, that's all right. Life is good. We've got Michael Steele coming up on the show today to talk about the latest going on in Washington. We've got have you heard the face-off we're doing between Sapelsa with his impending retirement? We are trying out someone to take his place.
Ah,
so
how
Ben
nice
Bradley.
Of you all.
Oh, Ben Bradley's
okay,
been
well,
up.
Mm-hmm. Ben's got game.
He does. He does. So we're going to see how he does today. Pretty good showing yesterday, so we'll have to see what the judges say on that. Adam Carolla is here. Are you a fan of Adam Carolla?
How do I know the name Adam Carolla?
He is, he's a stand-up comedian. He's been on late-night television. He's
coming through.
Funny, funny guy. So, yeah, he'll be up here with us. Top 5 and 5, you won't believe. Richard Roper reviewing some really great movies, I think, this weekend. I saw one of his reviews in the Sun-Times, and he's going to tell us about the new John Hamm movie, who appears as a hologram version of a dead guy.
Yes, I heard.
I don't know how this works, but we'll see, because I love John Hamm. I hope it does.
It sounds like a gimmick that he doesn't need, but I hope it's a good movie. We'll see.
I do, too. So that's coming up, and stay tuned.